You're listening to the New Point Community Church podcast. This message is a part of our message series, Mixtape. For more information about New Point or to get involved, visit newpoint.org/podcast.
Well, as you can see, those desires and those expectations are constant, no matter where we're at in our relationship with one another. Well, I'm glad that you're here today, and I want to welcome you and all of our five campuses. We're glad that you are tuning in and joining us. We're concluding a series called Mixtape, a Soundtrack for a Great Marriage. And I just want to kind of give us a little review as we wrap this up. And again, if you haven't been here, I just encourage you to download that podcast and be able to catch up so that you can connect all of these dots. But one of the things that we have said, as we just saw in that video, is that we have desires, and those desires lead to expectations. And what we all are trying to do, whether we're engaged, whether we're dating, whether we're married, whether we are now ready to have a child, here's what we're doing. We're all attempting to recreate or to avoid something in the past. You know, we just saw that in that video. Did you hear what they said? You know, one wants a boy, one wants a girl. They have different desires. They have different wants. And in their mind, they're either recreating something that they want for this child that they're going to have together, or they're thinking in their mind, you know what? I know the home that I grew up in. We're not going to do this with this kid. We're going to avoid that. And so what we've learned is that we're either attempting to recreate or to avoid something in the past. And it transforms our desires into expectations. And here's what we've learned about expectations. It's the strong belief that something will happen or be the case in the future. And so how do we handle those desires? How do we handle those expectations? Well, we've learned that in great marriages, the spouses understand that they owe each other everything, but they are owed nothing in return. That's how we handle our desires and our expectations. Whether we're married, whether we're single, whether we're dating, whether we're engaged, we have to approach it this way, that we owe one another everything, but we're not expecting anything in return. Now, today what I want to do is I want to share with us a powerful, powerful principle. And the principle that I want to share with us is one that each and every one of us can make. And it's the key to whether your relationship is going to be attractive, appealing, and contagious. And all of us have the ability to make this choice. All of us do. Matter of fact, we make it every day, whether we realize it or not. But for many of us, it feels more like a reaction than it does a choice. But we're all making it. And so what I want to do is I want us to become more aware that it's a choice that you and I can make, and it'll make your relationship attractive, contagious, appealing, and you can make a better decision. And I want to help us with that, because what happens is sometimes, and you may feel this right now, I don't even have a choice. Have you ever thought that? Have you ever said that? I just don't have a choice. Can I help you with that? That's a lie. We always have a choice. I always have a choice. You always have a choice. And we have to understand that. We have to embrace that. We have to realize that. And so I want us to look at this choice that you and I have. Now, Jesus has said it. He says, "A new command I give you, that you love one another." And as we've said, this wasn't new information, but what he says in the next sentence blows their mind. "As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And so this is the choice that we have. The choice that we have is to love one another in the same way that God has loved us. If you are a Christ follower today, you know that God loves you unconditionally. And so he calls you and I to love one another the way in which he loves us. And so Paul, the apostle, who wrote many, many letters, he constantly was bringing people back to this. Because this is foundational for every relationship. You want a relationship that is attractive? You want a relationship that's appealing? You want a relationship that is contagious? Then what happens is we're called to love one another as Christ has loved us. And Paul knew this, and so in all of his writings, he would repeat it over and over again. He would say it in a different way, but he would be saying the same thing. And so he wrote a church in Galatia, and here's what he wrote to them. If you are a follower of Christ Jesus, all that matters is your faith that makes you love others. Say this, Paul. What are you saying? All that matters is your faith expressing your love to other people. You might thought, I thought there were some things that were more important than that. Paul would say, no. It goes back to that one commandment. What he is saying is the most important thing, the foundational for all great relationships and all marriage, is that you love one another as I have loved you. Not as your daddy loved you. Not as your mom loved you. Not as a pastor loved you. But as Christ himself loves you. And so he says here, if you and I are a follower of Christ, if you're a follower of Christ, then all that matters in life is that your faith makes you love other people. Now, Paul describes this faith and the importance of it when he writes a letter to the church in Corinth. And it's there in your notes. And by the way, you can follow along or you can download it on your app there. But Paul is writing a group of people in Corinth, okay? And they're unfamiliar with God and his ways. And they had served many, many different gods, small g. And they related to those gods in completely different ways. And so what he wanted to do is he wanted to bring them back to this one truth. That if you're going to serve God with the big G, it's more than just vertical. It's horizontal. And really what he's saying here is the way in which we serve God, the way in which we love God, is how we love one another. It's not what we say to God. It's not even what we do to God. And this was completely foreign to them because the way in which they would serve their pagan gods is it was more important what they did for the god, small g, than how they treated one another. It really didn't matter how they treated one another as long as in some way they were able to appease God. And Paul now is training them. And he is saying, hey, you know what? In this faith, it's not only a vertical relationship, it's a horizontal relationship. And so he pins these words, and they're powerful, okay? And by the way, you know what? They're going to be familiar. You know why? Because if you're married here, there's a good chance you had this read at your marriage ceremony. Matter of fact, there's a good chance that you might have this hanging somewhere on the wall in your home. But what we want to do is we want to take it off the wall and we want to put it in our hearts. All right? So let's look at this. Here's what he says. He says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Wow. What he is saying here is so, so huge because what he just comes out of, if you want to read it, you can, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, he's talking about people worshiping God in supernatural ways, in powerful ways, and in speaking in God in mysteries, in tongues. And he says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. And basically what he is saying is this. He says, if you want that to be a part of your relationship with God, that's fine. There's no problem with that, okay? But don't kid yourself. That's not the main thing. To speak as angels, okay, is not the main thing. He says, you can do that, but if you don't have love, you're a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. He's basically saying, you are just a bunch of noise. Let me help us with that, okay? Don't judge me on my speaking ability. Well, you know what? Dwight speaks pretty good. I like listening to him, so he must be a man of love. Not so. Never judge somebody on how they speak. Go ask Patty. Go ask Caleb, Sarah, Nate, Jonathan, and Benjamin. And you'll find out whether I'm just a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal or whether or not I really love people. Go to my friends. You see, what he is saying here is just because you can speak well doesn't mean that you're a person of love. He goes on to say this. He says, if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I'm what? I am nothing. Wow. Here's what he's saying. Having great knowledge doesn't equal being deep spiritually. See, we have a tendency to think that the smartest people are the most mature people. We have a tendency because we live in an age of knowledge and we think, well, they're very knowledgeable in the Bible, so that must mean that they're really deep. That's not true. That's not what he's saying. He is saying that love is the measure. You want to know how deep somebody is? You want to know how mature somebody is? Find out how they love people, not how much they know. He goes on to say this. He says, if I give all my possessions to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I what? I gain nothing. What is he saying here? He is saying again, he says, you can do a lot of things that gains attention to you, but it doesn't mean that you love people, because you can give without loving. But you can't love without giving. And so what is Paul saying here? He's saying that love is essential. Love is essential. And in those words that we just read through, he's saying five things that you and I need to grasp, okay? What he's saying is this. He is saying that nothing I say will matter. If I don't love people, if I don't love my wife, if I don't love my husband, if I don't love my kids, it doesn't matter if I'm speaking truth or not. It really doesn't matter. Nothing that I say will matter. Also, this right here, nothing that I know will matter. I can know the Bible inside and out. I can know tremendous truth. But the fact of the matter, it doesn't matter unless I love. He goes on and basically saying this, nothing I believe will matter. Nothing I believe will matter. If I don't love. You ready, mom and dad? See, if you don't love your kids, if you don't make that decision, they don't really care what you believe. Doesn't connect. Your friends who maybe are not Christ followers, if you don't love them, nothing that you believe will matter. Matter of fact, you may be here today and you may not even be a Christ follower. And one of the reasons why you're not a Christ follower is because you've never seen love demonstrated. We want to tell you what we believe before we want to love you. And so you say, it doesn't matter what you believe. How about this one right here? Nothing that I give will matter. Nothing that I give will matter. Because what happens is you can give without loving, but you can't love without giving. You know, sometimes, here's what happens. You ready for me? In relationships, we give to get. We don't give because we love. You know what? If I do this for my sweetheart, you know, maybe she'll let me go on this trip. And it's not motivated out of love. It's motivated out of getting. How about this one right here? Nothing I accomplish will matter. Nothing I accomplish will matter. This is why love is so essential. And guess what? Here's what I want you to get today. You and I have the ability to make this choice every single day to love. Because if I don't love today, then nothing that I say matters. Nothing that I know matters. Nothing that I believe matters. Nothing that I give matters. Nothing that I accomplish matters. And so here's the question that I have for us. Do you have love? I'm not talking about this ushy, mushy, soft feeling that comes over you. Like when I would ask young couples, why do you want to get married? Because we love each other. And basically what they're saying is we have this feeling towards one another. We have this feeling. And Paul is wanting to make clear that love is not a feeling. It's essential, but it's not a feeling. It is a choice. Love is a choice that all of us have to make if we're going to have relationships that are attractive, that are contagious, that are appealing. And so love is essential, but here's else what he would say. He would say that love is energetic. It's something that we do. It's an action. It's an action. And he goes on to be able to tell us in a very, very practical way of how this love that is so essential and energetic is to be expressed in our relationships. Here's what he says. He says, love is what? Love is patient. You know what that means? Love puts up with anything. Love patiently accepts all things. It's ready to make allowances. This is the kind of love that demonstrates forgiveness, acceptance, patience. This kind of love allows for mistakes to be made. It doesn't haul people in for every mistake that they make. And this is good. You know why? Because you're married to a broken man. You're married to a broken woman. You have friends who are broken. They're imperfect. And so he said, let me tell you about this love. It's energetic. It takes energy to be patient. But he says it's also kind. He says love is kind. What does he mean here? He means that it defers. It defers to the other person. It's concerned about the other person. It values the other person's interest and where they're at and what they're going through. And then he says this. He says, love is not only kind, it does not envy. It's not jealous. And so what happens is when somebody in your life gets promoted or they get recognized or something comes into their life, you're not jealous and envious. Why them? Why do they get that? Why did they get recognized? He says, that's not love. He says, love does not envy. He goes on to say this, it does not boast. It does not boast. Basically, it does not try to outdo one another. You know, it's like maybe Bob saying, hey, let me tell you, I was just on a fishing trip and I caught a 12-inch bass. And I say, really? Last month, I caught a 24-inch bass. And what I'm doing is I'm trying to take the focus off of him. See, love does not boast. Love says, you know what? It's okay if the focus is on you. It's okay if the light shines on you. I'm okay with that. I'm not trying to top your story. I'm not trying to outdo you. Love, it doesn't boast. Then he goes on to say this. Love is not proud. It's not proud, which means that love can admit when it's wrong. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I didn't do that. I dropped the ball. Love is not demanding. It's not proud. Proud people are demanding. They can't say I'm wrong. They can't say I'm sorry. He goes on to say this. He says, it does not dishonor others. Love does not dishonor others. And so what happens is, love thinks this way. I would never want to do anything that would embarrass Patty. I'd never want to call attention to anything in her life that would make her feel small. I don't want to do it to Caleb. I don't want to do it to Sarah. I don't want to do it to Nate or Jonathan or Benjamin. I don't want to do it to my friends. I don't want to get a laugh or something at the expense of belittling somebody. It does not dishonor. I'm not going to do that. Goes on to say this, it is not self-seeking. Basically what that means is, you know what, I'm not going to go first. I'm going to let you go first. I'm going to put your needs, I'm going to put your wants, I'm going to put your desires ahead of me. He goes on to say this, he says, it is not easily angered. I don't fly off the handle. I don't have outbursts of anger. How about this one right here? I think we'd all like this one. Love keeps no records of wrong. Wouldn't that be great in a relationship? You don't have a scorecard? This is the 21st time you've done this. Huh? You got any relationships of where you don't keep the record of wrong? You don't have a scorecard? You know, it might do all of us good if we would take that scorecard and just kind of rip it up. And then he says these powerful words about love. This is why it takes energy. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Does not delight in evil. It's not waiting to catch somebody to do something wrong. It's not laying a trap for your husband so that what happens is you can build your case against him. It's not laying a trap for your wife so that what happens is you can delight in it and say, see, I told you, I told you, I told you, I told you. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Love doesn't keep score. You see, what is Paul saying in all of this? He is saying that love seeks the highest good of the other person, wanting their best, doing what I can to help them reach that potential. That's what love is. You remember mutual submission? Leveraging all what? All of my resources and all that I am for the good of you. That's mutual submission. That's love. And love is always seeking the highest good of the other person, wanting their best, wanting them to succeed, and doing what you can to help them to reach their potential. So love is basically saying, I want you to be the best that you can possibly be. That's what love is. It's not soft, okay? It's not soft. Love's willing to challenge. It's not soft because what happens is I want your best. You want my best. And so you might say, well, Dwight, if love is the foundation for every strong relationship and every strong marriage, what's the problem? What's the obstacles? Well, I see two obstacles that we have. One is our experiences. Our experiences. You know, we live among broken people. Would you agree with me? And sometimes our experiences with one another is not what we desire, because we all fall short. And so what happens is we have these experiences and they become an obstacle in us loving other people. And yet Paul, who says that our faith should be expressed by loving other people, he writes this in Romans 12, 21, when he writes to them. He says, do not let wrong things win victory over you, but win a victory over wrong things by the good things you do. Basically, what he's saying is there's going to be times that things happen to you that are not right. They're not the best. They're wrong. Your husband's going to wrong you. Your wife's going to wrong you. Your mom, your dad's going to wrong you. Your son, your daughter, they're going to wrong you, mom and dad. Your friends are going to wrong you. Why? Because we're imperfect people. And what he is saying here is don't let those things win a victory over you. He says, but win a victory over the wrong things by doing good, by making the choice to love one another. And so our experiences can become an obstacle. And so we go tit for tat. Well, if you did that to me, then I'm going to do that. Then what happens is our experiences win. The other obstacle is just our issues. our issues. We all got hurts and habits and hang-ups. We all have a history. And what happens is this. Maybe you have hurts in your life. Maybe because of your past, you have a low-grade fever that causes you to mistrust people. And you have a hard time trusting people. And so what happens is you end up bringing things on yourself without even realizing it, because you're laying a trap. You're expecting that person to be perfect. You're expecting them to relate to you in a perfect way because that's your expectation. But the fact of the matter is you don't even relate to them that way because of your own hurts. And so what happens is when we have an experience, we focus so much on the other person that we lose sight that maybe I, because of my own issues and because of my own hurt and because of my own pain, I've contributed to this. Y'all okay on that one? And so what happens if we're not careful, we just look at the experience and we say, well, if they wouldn't have done this and this and this, and what happened is they just revealed your hurt. They just revealed your pain. And so there's times that I need to look at who I am. Dwight, why did you respond that way? Why did you become so angry? Why did you withdraw? What causes you to do that? See, I can be an obstacle in my relationship with my husband or with your husband. I'm not married to a husband, okay? And it's because of your issues with your daddy. Or the reason why you respond to your wife the way that you do is because you had a critical mother. And so anytime she makes a suggestion to you, you bristle. And the fact of the matter is, it's your issue that's getting in the way. You see, here's what the psalmist writes about it. Great peace have they which love the law, and nothing shall offend them. How easily are you offended? See, it lets you know about your issues. And they can get in the way of you having a great relationship. Matter of fact, they can get you in the way of not loving people. Because, well, I'm not going to love him. I can't get hurt again. You're living among broken people. And so what's the key? Paul would say love. And here's what he says about love. He says love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. That's what love does. And you and I get to choose that every day. We get to choose to protect. We get to choose to trust. We get to choose to hope. We get to choose to persevere. You know, there's this formula, and I've shared it with you before, that's going around. It's very popular in the sports world, and it's very popular in the business world, the marketplace. And what they say is this: you have an event plus a choice or a response, and it equals out an outcome. But here's the thing. You and I do not control the event. We don't control the event or the experience that we have with other people. And we don't even control the outcome. All we can control is the choice that we make. And what Paul would say is, I want you to make that choice love. That no matter what event you find yourself in, no matter what experience you are having, whether it's in your marriage, whether it's with your son, whether it's with your daughter, whether it's at work, what I want you to do is I want you to choose love. And so here's what he would say. The event that you're having, choose to protect. Choose to protect. What does that mean? You know what? I've got this event that's going on, and I don't understand it, but I'm going to choose to protect from becoming suspicions. I'm going to choose to protect from not trusting. I'm going to choose to protect from not believing the best. And so what happens is Paul says, if we're going to choose to love, we always choose to protect. And you're going to choose something. And it may not be to protect. It may be to run. And it impacts the outcome. Paul would say this, the event that's going on in your life, choose to trust. Choose to trust. What does that mean? It means to believe all things. It means to choose a positive explanation. When something happens in your life and it doesn't go according to your plan, do you choose a positive explanation or do you say, I knew they'd do that. I knew he would do that. I told him. He's just doing this to get underneath my skin. She's doing that because she's trying to get back at me at what happened 10 days ago with the kids. Or do you choose to trust? How about this one right here? Paul would say, choose to hope. When you have that event that's out of your control, he would say, choose to hope. Love always trends to the positive. I'm not going to allow myself to get negative. Hope always looks forward. Hope is always optimistic. It's not stuck in the past. It doesn't look backwards. Love is always hopeful. It always expects the best. And then he says this. He says, if you have an event, choose to persevere. Choose. Why do you have to choose to persevere? Because we live among broken people. We live among broken people. And I'm not going to allow my marriage, I'm not going to allow my relationships with people who I say that I love to be destroyed by my desires and by my expectations that aren't fulfilled or aren't met. I'm going to choose to persevere. I'm going to choose to stay at it. I'm going to choose to be determined. I'm going to endure, even if it's hard, even if it's painful. I'm going to endure. And basically what it means here is that you and I become stubborn. And we say, you know what? I'm not giving up. I'm going to persevere through this. I don't like what's necessarily going on, but I'm going to persevere so that we can have a better outcome than what we have. And so guess what? Paul would say, love always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. And it always perseveres. You want to know the other choice? Here's the other choice. The other choice is to rejoice in finding mistakes. The other choice is to be cautious in giving of yourself. You're not going to be extravagant in giving yourself. You're always going to hold back. You're never going to fully give yourself to him or to her. How about this? The other choice is just to be suspicious. You're just waiting for the shoe to fall off. Or how about this? The other choice is to believe the worst. Or embrace doubt. Now let me ask you, mom, dad, you got a daughter? You got a son? Are you going to set them down and say, hey, you know what? I know you're dating this boy. I know you're dating this girl. Let me just school you on some things, okay? Rejoice and find, lay a trap for them because they're going to disappoint you and fail you anyways. So why don't you lay a trap so that what happens is you can say, gotcha. There you go again. You know what else? Why don't you just be suspicious of them and question everything that they do and believe the very worst about them? That's what you need to do when you're heading into this marriage. Would any of us do that? I don't think so. But that's the other choice. If we choose not to protect and trust and hope and love. And it's a choice that you and I can make every single day. To do that. What did Jesus say? Jesus said, a new commandment I give you. Love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. Now check this out, okay? I want you to hear this. Here's what Jesus went on to say. By this, your kids will know that you are a follower of Christ. By this, your husband, your wife will know that you are a follower of Christ. By this, your neighbors and your co-workers will know that you are a follower of Christ. By this, the people that you go to school with will know that you are a follower of Christ if you love one another. I talked to a lot of people. I don't know what happened, Dwight. We brought our kids to church. And they don't want anything to do with God. Maybe because they didn't see you and your spouse loving each other. All that I say doesn't matter. All that I give doesn't matter. All that I do doesn't matter. All that I accomplish doesn't matter if I don't have love. They will know that you are a Christ follower. They will know that I am a Christ follower. The greatest gift that I can give my kids is to love Patty, is to always protect, always trust, always hope, always persevere. It's the greatest gift I can give my kids. Because it's by that that they're going to understand. Daddy's a broken man, mom's a broken woman, and yet they got something going on. So let me ask you this question. What does love require of me? A choice, a decision. It's not a feeling. What does love require of me? When I have that event that's out of my control, that maybe my husband, my wife, my son, my daughter, my mom, my dad, my boss, my teammate, an employee, and they do something, I choose to protect. I choose to trust. I choose to hope. I choose to persevere. And here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Here's your homework. I want you to do that for the next 2 weeks. You're going to have stuff going on in your life that, you know what, sometimes isn't pretty. It's an event. It's out of your control. But I want you to choose to protect that relationship. I want you to choose to trust in that relationship. I want you to choose to hope for that relationship. I want you to choose to persevere in that relationship. And here's what I promise you. Something dynamic will happen. But let me tell you what will happen first. It won't be in that other person. The first thing that will be transformed will be you. It'll be you. It'll be you. And in transforming you, you know what? It'll bleed out to all of your other relationships. Would you pray with me? God, we thank you today that you've demonstrated another kind of love for us. You always protect us. You always trust us. You always hope for the best for us. And you persevere with us. You never give up. You never forsake us. You never leave us. And you've called me, you've called all of us who are Christ followers to love, not as we've been loved by other people in our life, but we've been called to love as you have loved us. And so may we make that choice. It's a choice. It's a decision that we have the opportunity to make every day and at every event that we experience. And by this, people will know that we love you in a personal, deep, deep way. And it's in Jesus' name that we pray and give thanks. Amen.
If you want to talk to someone about a decision you've made or let us know how God's moving through this series, visit newpoint.org/podcast. Be sure to stay connected with us throughout the week on social media and don't forget to download our app. Thanks for listening to today's message, and we hope you continue to realize and reach your full potential in Jesus Christ.